Imagine if, instead of asking a massive faceless corporation supercomputer a question, you had your own tiny, highly localized team of digital savants living permanently right on your laptop.
Yeah, just sitting right there on your local machine.
Right. And like one of them is a master mathematician, one is a creative poet, another acts as a strict fact checker, maybe one is just a dedicated bodyguard filtering out bad links.
And they're all communicating with each other.
Exactly. They talk to each other, they pass your work back and forth, and they never, ever send your personal data out to the cloud.
Which is huge.
It is. And today we have our hands on a brainstorming chat log. It's this raw, unpolished blueprint that outlines how to make this wild scenario an everyday reality for you.
Because, I mean, we are so used to the current paradigm of these monolithic language models, right?
Oh, absolutely.
These giant brains in the cloud like GPT-4 or Claude. You send them a prompt through an API, which is essentially just a digital waiter taking your order to the kitchen, and they send you a fully cooked answer back.
Right. But you can't see the kitchen.
Exactly. You have absolutely zero visibility into that kitchen. You don't know how they cooked it, what ingredients they used, or you know who they shared your recipe with.
And that brings us to our mission for this deep dive. We are exploring this fascinating source document detailing what they call a modular local first AI orchestration engine.
It's a mouthful, but it's a really cool concept.
It really is. We are looking at a roadmap for moving away from those massive black box AI monoliths. The goal here is to empower you to build your own custom, perfectly tailored, almost like a Frankenstein AI network right on your own machines. So, okay, let's unpack this, because the foundational concept here completely changes the way we think about interacting with machine intelligence.
Yeah, so the working title the authors use in this chat log is Neuralum, and the tagline they pitched is Weave Your Own Intelligence.
I like that.
Right. The core philosophy here is decentralization. So instead of querying that massive API on a distant server, you download discrete, specialized model weights.
Like tiny individual AI brains.
Exactly. Each one is trained to do one specific thing incredibly well. You download them and you connect them together on your own terms.
Now, the document actually breaks the anatomy of this Neuralum system into three distinct parts to help visualize it. Mm. It's the eye, the brain, and the hand. I want to look at the eye first, which is the input layer.
Right, because we aren't just typing text into a generic prompt box anymore.
No, not at all. The eye uses specialized encoder models. Their sole job is to take the messy reality of the physical world and translate it into a mathematical format the internal network can actually digest.
So like you might plug in a model like Whisper if you want to speak to your system via audio.
Right.
Or a model like CLIP if you want to, you know, just drag and drop images directly into it.
And then once that input is translated, it moves into the brain. The source refers to this as the hidden transform layer.
And this is really where the magic happens. It uses what developers call a directed acyclic graph, or a DAG.
DAG.
Right. Yeah. If you aren't familiar with the term, just picture a highly complex one-way assembly line. It's basically a flowchart of specialized models where data only ever moves forward, never backward.
So instead of one giant model trying to juggle everything at once, you literally build an assembly line of specialists.
Yes. So the first node on the graph might just be a toxicity checker.
Oh.
And if your prompt passes the safety check, it hands the data over to the next node, which might be, say, a specialist in summarizing text.
Oh, I see.
Then that summary gets handed to a translation node, and maybe finally to a node trained entirely on writing SQL code.
Got it. And at the very end of that assembly line, you reach the hand, the output layer.
Right, how the AI interacts back with you in the physical world.
Exactly. Decoders handling text-to-speech so the system can physically talk to you, or image generators, or just incredibly fast text streaming straight to your terminal.
Yeah.
You know, looking at this architecture, it actually reminds me of building a custom pedal board for an electric guitar.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, or like putting together a modular synthesizer. You are buying a reverb pedal from one company, a distortion pedal from another, and wiring them together to create a totally unique sound.
It's exactly like that.
But that brings up a massive technical wall for me. Because if I buy a reverb pedal, I know it takes a standard quarter-inch audio cable.
Right.
But AI models don't have standard cables. If one tiny AI brain was trained by researchers at Meta and another was built by a hobbyist in their basement, they don't speak the same underlying mathematical language. So how do you force entirely different AI modules to talk to each other?
Yeah, that is the primary technical hurdle here. And the authors of the chat log, they tackle it head on. They note that Model A might output data in a specific tensor shape or embedding space that Model B simply cannot comprehend.
Which sounds complicated.
It does, but to break that down, when an AI processes data, it outputs massive grids of numbers, and we call those grids tensors. So imagine Model A finishes its job and hands over a spreadsheet with, say, 512 columns. But Model B, the next AI in your chain, was programmed to only accept spreadsheets with 768 columns.
Oh, so they just don't match up.
Exactly. If you just plug them into each other, the system crashes. They are fundamentally misaligned.
So you would need an adapter, like some kind of universal translator sitting between every single node on that assembly line.
And the blueprint proposes exactly that. They call it the Universal Tensor Protocol, or UTP.
UTP, got it.
It basically mandates that every single module you download gets wrapped in an adapter layer. All the internal communication moving between these different brains gets converted into a highly standardized format.
Okay.
They specifically use JSON-LD to handle the metadata that provides the context and labeling about the data being passed. And then they use normalized vector embeddings for the actual semantic data itself.
I want to pause on that just for a second because vector embeddings sound super intimidating, but it's really just a way of mapping concepts to coordinates, right?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
The adapter takes the messy concept of, say, a dog, and turns it into a specific set of coordinates on a multidimensional map, so the next model knows exactly where to look. It forces a common tongue.
Exactly.
But the blueprint also highlights something called the stitch. And this seems to be the piece that handles those mismatched spreadsheets you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the stitch is the automated mathematical plumbing of the whole operation. When the orchestration engine, the code running the Neuralink, detects that 512 column to 768 column mismatch, it doesn't throw an error message at you.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. Instead, it automatically inserts a projection layer between the two models.
Yeah.
It dynamically calculates the math required to reshape the data so it fits perfectly into the next model. You, as the user, never have to write a single line of translation code.
So the software just completely handles the friction for you. That's wild. Now, to actually run all this math, the document points out that the execution engine would sit on top of proven open-source inference engines. Things like Llama.cpp, ONNX Runtime, or PyTorch.
Right. You need that solid foundation.
Exactly. And the goal is to aggressively utilize whatever hardware acceleration you already have, whether that's a beefy graphics card, a GPU, or a dedicated neural processing unit, an NPU, built into your processor.
Yeah.
But I do have to push back here for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Honestly, my laptop's fans spin up like a jet engine just trying to run one moderately sized local model. The idea of loading five different specialized brains into memory at the exact same time, I mean, that sounds like a fantastic way to melt a motherboard. How on earth does an average user manage the memory requirements for a localized Frankenstein network?
You are hitting on the harsh reality of local inference there. VideoRAM, the memory on your graphics card, is the absolute ultimate bottleneck. You physically cannot load five robust models into standard consumer VRAM simultaneously.
I didn't think so.
But what's fascinating here is how the blueprint circumvents this physical limitation using two specific memory management features, swapping and quantization.
Okay, let's look at swapping first. The document mentions this in relation to that directed acyclic graph, the one-way assembly line.
Right. Because the network only moves in one direction, you don't actually need the translation model sitting in memory while the toxicity checker is still doing its job.
Oh, that makes sense.
So swapping is just dynamic memory management. The engine will load a model from your hard drive into your VRAM just milliseconds before it's needed, run the data through it, and then instantly flush it right out of VRAM to make room for the next model in the sequence.
Oh, so it's like a relay race.
Exactly.
The anchor leg runner doesn't need to be sprinting on the track while the first runner is doing their lap. They just step onto the track right as the baton is being passed.
Yeah, that is the perfect analogy. And that frees up massive amounts of space.
But what about the models themselves? How do we make them smaller to begin with?
That is where quantization comes into play. Let's look at the math for a second. When an AI model is trained in a massive data center, its knowledge is stored as weights, which is essentially the mathematical strength of connections between its artificial neurons. Those weights are usually saved as extremely precise numbers. We're talking 16-bit or 32-bit floating-point numbers with long, trailing decimals.
So very heavy files.
Very heavy. It's highly precise, but it takes up an enormous amount of physical memory. Quantization is the act of ruthlessly rounding those numbers off. The Neuralink engine enforces 4-bit, or 8-bit integer quantization for the hidden layers.
Okay, so you are basically just dropping the decimal precision.
You are. It's like taking a massive, uncompressed raw photograph and exporting it as a JPEG. If you zoom all the way in, you lose some of the absolute finest detail, like the AI gets marginally less nuanced.
Right.
But the file size plummets. A model that originally demanded 16 gigabytes of RAM suddenly only needs 4 gigabytes. That is really the only way a multi-node network becomes feasible on a standard machine.
Okay, so through swapping and quantization, we know it's theoretically possible to run this without causing a localized electrical fire. Right. But that brings us to the core why. Why go through this entire complex process of downloading weights, configuring pipelines, and managing VRAM? Why not just open a web browser and pay $20 a month for ChatGPT or Claude? They've already spent millions of dollars doing the hard work.
Well, the chat log breaks this decision down into four distinct value propositions. The most critical one, arguably, is privacy first. Because every single computation happens on your local hardware. Absolutely nothing leaves your terminal.
And the value of that simply cannot be overstated. If you are a lawyer processing confidential client documents, a developer working on proprietary corporate code, or just a person wanting an AI to analyze your personal journal entries, you do not want that beta pinging a server halfway across the world, potentially being used as training data for the next massive model.
Exactly. The privacy aspect is a massive draw. The second proposition is cost efficiency, which, you know, might sound counterintuitive when we were talking about using your own electricity. But think about the computational waste of modern monoliths. We regularly use massive, state-of-the-art supercomputer models just to fix a typo or route a simple request. In a modular system, you can use a tiny, ultra-cheap model for simple tasks and reserve the heavy, power-hungry models only for the complex cognitive lifting.
It's the difference between using a simple calculator to figure out a tip at a restaurant versus booting up a supercomputer to do the exact same math. It's just about using the right tool for the job.
Which leads directly into the third differentiator, specialization. A generalized monolithic LLM has to be okay at everything, which often means it's mediocre at highly specific tasks.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Exactly. But a custom network of specialized small language models, or SLMs, can vastly outperform a monolith. You can chain together a tiny model trained exclusively on advanced physics, connected to a model trained strictly on creative writing, connected to a master coder. A specialized team of experts almost always beats a single generalist.
And the final proposition from the document is transparency. Right now, if a monolithic AI gives you a hallucinated fact or a heavily biased answer, you have absolutely no way of knowing where things went wrong. It's a total black box.
Yeah.
But with a local Neuralink setup, you can trace the logic step by step. You can look at your pipeline and see exactly which specific module mangled the data.
And to build this ecosystem of specialized models, the authors propose creating something they call the registry. They affectionately refer to it as the App Store for Brains.
I love that name.
Right. This wouldn't just be a wild west of random files. It would be a centralized hub where users could find verified, safety-checked, and pre-quantized modules ready to be plugged directly into a workflow.
See, here's where it gets really interesting, because the document details how the community wouldn't just share individual models. The registry would allow users to share their entire pipeline configurations via what they call .loom files.
Just sharing the whole setup.
Exactly. Think about the implications of that. You could go online and download someone else's perfectly tweaked, highly optimized .loom file for creative fiction writing or automated bug fixing, the exact same way you might share a custom Spotify playlist or a video game mod. You don't have to be the genius architect. You can just download the blueprint of a master architect and hit run on your machine.
It completely democratizes the engineering process.
It really does. But looking at the reality of this workflow, like data moving from an input, getting translated by an adapter, passing through a toxicity checker, getting unloaded from VRAM, loading up a math solver, passing through another adapter, and finally generating text. I have a real concern about latency. Doesn't this entire system risk becoming incredibly agonizingly slow?
Yep.
Or worse, by the time the data gets to the fifth model in the chain, doesn't the system just lose the plot of my original prompt?
Those are incredibly valid concerns, and the chat log specifically flags them as critical challenges. Let's tackle the latency issue first. Running five models sequentially, waiting for one to completely finish before the next one starts, is undeniably too slow for a fluid user experience.
Right.
The proposed solution is a technical implementation called parallel branching.
Meaning the assembly line splits and runs simultaneously?
Correct. The DAG doesn't have to be a single straight line. While one node is analyzing the sentiment of your text, another node can be simultaneously translating it into French, and another can be searching a local database.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they work in parallel, which completely collapses the overall processing time. On top of that, they detail an early exit feature. If the very first node is a lightweight safety model, and it immediately flags your prompt as malicious, it stops the chain dead in its tracks.
It just cuts it off.
Exactly. Doesn't bother waking up the massive reasoning model, saving massive amounts of time and compute.
Well, that definitely solves the speed issue. But what about losing the plot? Because this is already a problem with current AI. You give it a long prompt, and by the end of its response, it has completely forgotten your very first instruction.
Yeah, we've all seen that.
Right. And if we are passing data across five entirely different brains, it sounds like a giant game of telephone. I whisper the instruction to the first model, it whispers its interpretation to the second, and by the end, the output is completely mangled.
Yeah, in the literature, that phenomenon is known as context loss.
Yeah.
And it is a severe threat to chained AI systems. To combat it, the developers propose engineering a shared context buffer. Think of it as a localized high-speed temporary scratch pad that sits independent of the models themselves.
Ah, I love this. So instead of a game of telephone where they only whisper to the person next to them, the shared context buffer acts like a central whiteboard in the middle of a conference room. Every single AI node on the assembly line can look up at the whiteboard, read your original prompt, see what the other nodes have already contributed, and then add their own specific notes without losing the original instruction.
That is exactly how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
The context remains universally accessible to the entire network throughout the session, which enforces absolute coherence. We also have to talk about how the document addresses the final two hurdles, compatibility and security. We mentioned earlier that models come from different developers.
Right.
That means they are saved in wildly different file formats. You'll see acronyms like GGUF, SafeTensors, yeah. or ONNX.
Just to clarify for anyone unfamiliar, those aren't fundamentally different types of AI. They are just different file formats for saving neural network weights. It's like how an image can be saved as a JPEG, a PNG, or a GIF.
Precisely. To handle that, the NeuralLoom system builds a containerized wrapper for each model type. The main orchestration engine never actually cares whether the underlying file is a GGUF or a SafeTensor. It just talks to the standardized wrapper. And that wrapper ties directly into the security aspect. Downloading arbitrary weights from the internet and running them locally is an immense security risk.
Because bad actors could hide malicious code inside those massive gigabytes of neural weights.
They absolutely can. The solution outlined here is rigorous sandboxing. The inference nodes run within highly restricted environments, specifically WSEYL, which stands for WebAssembly or Docker containers.
Oh, they're locked down.
Effectively, yes.
Yeah.
This quarantines the model. If there is malicious code hidden inside the weights, it is trapped inside that sandbox. It cannot escape the container to execute on your actual operating system or steal your local files.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is incredibly clear that solving these specific, gritty hardware hurdles, latency, context loss, compatibility, and sandboxing is what actually pulls this idea out of the realm of theoretical thought experiments. It turns it into a robust operating system that could genuinely threaten the dominance of cloud-based giants.
Because a modular concept is useless if it takes 5 minutes to generate an answer and crashes your computer.
Mm.
By addressing the mechanics of swapping, parallel processing, and universal adapters, they're creating a viable path forward for local intelligence.
Let's talk about that path forward. The chat log finishes by outlining a very clear minimum viable product roadmap spread over roughly 6 months. Phase one, the first 2 months, is completely foundational. They are just building the loader, a command line interface that can load two different GGUF format models and create a simple pipe. Taking text, turning it into an embedding, and saving it.
Getting the basics down.
Right. Then phase two introduces the stitcher, which implements that configuration format so the output of one model can automatically become the input of the next.
Moving into phase three, around months 5 and 6, the focus shifts to the optimizer. This is where they implement that crucial VRAM swapping we discussed, making sure it doesn't melt your laptop. They also plan to add the networking commands to automatically fetch these models directly from repositories like Hugging Face.
Finally, phase four, heading into month 6 and beyond, is the ecosystem. That is when users can start publishing those .loom configurations to the registry, and the system begins supporting non-text inputs like audio and images. They even brainstormed some potential names for the software at the tail end of the log.
Oh, yeah.
NeuroLoom was the working title we've been using, but they also threw out names like Loom AI, Tensor Stitch, Modu Brain, Chainwink CLI, and NeuroPipe.
Whatever they decide to call it, the underlying paradigm shift is undeniable. The document concludes by explicitly stating why this project matters at this specific moment in time. We're currently living in the monolithic LLM era, but the wider tech industry is aggressively moving toward what we call agentic workflows.
Where the AI doesn't just answer questions, but acts as an independent agent, breaking down multi-step tasks and executing them across different tools.
Exactly. The industry is moving toward agents and small language models. This NeuroLoom concept perfectly bridges that gap. It gives power users the ability to build an intelligent network tailored specifically to their physical hardware constraints and their highly unique workflows without requiring a PhD in deep learning to wire the underlying math together.
So, what does this all mean? Ultimately, the takeaway from this blueprint is that the future of artificial intelligence might not be a single omniscient giant brain floating in a corporate data center. Instead, the future might look a lot more decentralized. A customized, intricately stitched together network of specialized experts woven entirely by you, running quietly and privately on your own desk.
It replaces a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach to intelligence with a one-size-fits-you reality.
It is an incredibly democratizing vision. But as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over on your own. If this modular, localized future actually comes to pass, and you are given the power to perfectly weave an AI to match your exact workflow, your exact preferences, and your exact worldview, what kind of personal biases or intellectual blind spots might your custom-stitched Frankenstein AI end up inheriting from its creator?